This is the 10 Minute Teacher Podcast, episode 677, Assessment and Grading in Distance Learning. Welcome to the 10 Minute Teacher Podcast, hosted by author, educator, speaker, and mom, the cool cat teacher, Vicki Davis. Can assessment be accurately conducted during distance learning? Assessment expert Dr. Thomas Guskey reflects on the positive and negative aspects, plus offers advice about how he thinks schools can improve their assessments this fall to focus on learning. Dr. Guskey is professor of educational psychology at the University of Kentucky. Let's join the conversation right now. Enjoy.
Today, I'm so excited. We have Dr. Thomas Guskey, assessment expert, with us today to talk about assessment, of course. He is at the College of Education at the University of Kentucky in Lexington. So, Tom, let's talk about assessment and distance learning. I'm sure you've been observing the landscape and looking at what's going on. Do you have any concerns?
Well, yes. First, Vicki, let me thank you for inviting me to be a part of the session today. I feel quite honored to be with you today. But you're absolutely right. The virus and the closures of schools has compelled educators at all levels to think about assessment in very different ways. It's placed a lot of pressure on them and some limitations on what they can do and what they cannot do, especially as we deal with issues of what's fair and meaningful and equitable within the challenges that we face. Especially the challenges of equitability have really altered the way we look at this and the solutions that we consider trying to remedy these situations and the problems they create.
When you say equitability, I'm assuming you're talking about how some students have access and some don't. And of course, some students may have access, but they may not have adult supervision at home and they're very young children. And is that equitable to hold them to the same standard as someone who may have a grandmother or something there with them? Is those are the biggest equity concerns you see?
Yes, exactly. There are three major areas where we find there can be tremendous inequity. The first is just the access to technology. Not all students have access to internet. We have situations here in Kentucky where parents are actually driving to the nearest McDonald's or Starbucks and sitting in the parking lot so their children can do assignments. They don't have sometimes the hardware or the software that they need. And so that has been a tremendous challenge for many households. We have the inequitable access to just learning materials, the paper, pencils, pens, calculators, things like that you may need at home. And finally, your other point, which was really important, the inequitable access to adult support. In many homes, the parents are still working outside the home. They have multiple children where they have to share access to whatever technology is available there. Sometimes parents don't feel really well prepared to help their students, especially when they move into the middle grades in high school. We have homes where English isn't the primary language spoken, and in many homes where the parents are also teachers. So they're trying to provide for their own children while making sure that they provide adequate relief for the students in their classes. And all these things really contribute to those vast differences we have to consider in terms of the equity issues.
So, Tom, can we even assess in this situation? What do we do? How do we make forward progress and give the stability and the routine and the social referencing that kids need so that they can make it through this time?
Well, I think that there are two sort of major forces that have always been at work and impressing upon teachers in terms of assessment. The first is the idea of using assessments for feedback and to promote learning. And then the second is the force that is compelling teachers to gather information for the purposes of accountability and grading. And unfortunately, they don't always pull us in the same direction. But I think that the one advantage and where we've really made significant progress in this time of hardship has been to recognize we can't do everything and really caused us to focus more specifically on that force that compels us to think about the feedback and learning aspects of assessment. So that allowed us to help teachers understand that assessments that really facilitate learning and help students in this way can be used in very good ways, even when kids are learning from home, that it really changes the distinction between like formative and summative assessments, that we don't have to think of them in those terms anymore. If you're focusing on learning, then any assessment is formative until the students show they got it. And when they show they got it, then we can consider it summative. So I think that this has really, in odd ways, pressed us to be much more responsive to those learning concerns for students. And the results have been pretty positive.
You know, they're positive if the child has access. I mean, I guess it's just such a hard situation. So, Tom, as you look to the future, and we know that options for educators, they're going to have to be blended. So our ideal is we want to be in the classroom with our students, but say we have a period of time that we don't. How does assessment need to level up and improve?
Well, I think that one of the positive aspects that will come from this is we've sort of come to recognize that the assessment accountability issues and the assessment grading issues are not really that important. And we can get by in very good and positive ways by focusing more on the learning aspects of assessment, using assessments as real learning tools, providing lots of flexibility within those, and even giving students some choice. That when teachers turn the situation back on students and say, these are the things that we really want you to learn and be able to do, how can you show me that you have learned this well, and providing students some options. It's opened up all these different venues for students demonstrating the learning outcomes in ways and giving students increased agency in making those kind of decisions. I think we'll carry those forward, and all that will be to, I think, the teacher's advantage and also to students' advantage.
So, Tom, what are your concerns as we move forward of things you don't want to see happen?
Well, one of my most important issues that I keep stressing in these webinars and Zoom sessions and Skype sessions that we've been considering is to recognize that we need to make assessments for the purposes of accountability and grading easier for teachers. We need to lessen these distinctions that teachers have to make. I mean, for example, many of the schools have gone to limiting the number of cutoffs and grade categories that teachers have to make, where in many schools they're going to like a successful completion versus incomplete and causing only one distinction to be made, or maybe three categories of you got it, this was really outstanding, and then you still need some more time with this. Up to letter grades, where we have five or possibly four distinctions. But it's also helped us recognize that a percentage grade system, where there are 100 different categories of performance, 100 different cutoffs that teachers have to establish, become very difficult for teachers to make. And I think with that recognition, we're moving in positive ways to say we need to get rid of stuff like percentage grades and move to categories that are more defensible, far more reliable for teachers to use, and then communicate adequately in good positive ways to students what they're doing well, where they need to make some changes, and our confidence that they can learn these things really well.
Well, you know, assessment is such a challenge, and having conversations about assessment is important as schools need to change. How do you recommend, as we go into the summer, that superintendents and principals facilitate conversations on effective assessment and what it does look like in the fall? Is there sort of a best practice for moving a school forward in positive, better, improved assessment?
I think so. I think that what I've been encouraging school leaders to think about is to engage all of their staff members in thoughtful conversations about really the purpose of the assessment. And if we establish that our purpose of assessment is to really facilitate learning, that we want assessments to be learning tools, that we want to use it in positive ways to provide students with feedback on their learning so that they can take these assessments and feedback and use it in ways to say, this is what I know, this is what I'm able to do. Here are some areas that I need to put in some extra time and effort. I need to try a little bit harder here. I need to approach this in a different way. And remove from teachers, if that's our purpose, the pressures for the accountability, soften the pressures for grading, that we'll be able to make it a much more productive process. So I think that recognizing limitations that we face now and what we can carry forward, especially to initiating these conversations about our purpose in doing this in the first place, will be very, very productive.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about. I love your work. You do have a new book that's come out this year, Get Set Go, Creating Successful Grading and Reporting Systems from Solution Tree Publishing, and quite a few other books on grading and assessment. And thanks for helping us think, Tom.
Well, Vicki, again, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
If you enjoyed today's 10-Minute Teacher podcast, subscribe on iTunes. You can also catch up with Vicki on Twitter at CoolCatTeacher or level up and learn with her blogs and free resources at CoolCatTeacher.com. Thanks for listening.